the impact, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what else could they, what else could he do, though? Cliff?
Well, sorry. What was your question?
That's hilarious. Stop watching TV.
You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football, sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I'm your host, Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D, and we gotta say, leave the best to last. We can say that we do love Rider fans, Rider Nation. There's an asterisk by that, though. if you know, listen to the Piffles Pod, you will know this gentleman. Steve Safinuk, welcome, sir. Thanks for joining us in the flight deck this week.
No problem. Thanks for having me. And you say asterisk. Are you referring to the 09 Grey Cup?
No. Far as I can see, I think it's still a W for the Montreal.
Just a little mark above it.
Let's see. And I think there was one the following year, too, right? 2010?
Yeah. I was at both.
Yeah. That's good to have you. We wanted to have you on specifically, too, because you are going to be making a non-CFL-sanctioned trip this weekend, and you're going to be joining us in Montreal. You said for the first time in a while, at least been into the city, but tell us about your trip that you're going to be taking this weekend.
Oh man, I can't wait for it. It started randomly. We had a couple of visitors from Hamilton, Sandra and Rob Scott, and they were coming down for the Hamilton Rider game, and they, at our tailgate, just kind of in passing said, hey, you guys should come out to Hamilton for the Rider game. And if you know anything about me, if you mention anything travel-related, mm-hmm. it gets stuck in my head until I either say no or I do it.
Right.
I just can't. I've got a travel bug. It happens all the time. So I went home, talked to the wife, and booked the flight to Hamilton, and then looked at the schedule and realized that there was two games in Toronto and Montreal the next following days, and thought, why not? I mean, haven't been to either stadium, haven't been to Tim Hortons Field, haven't been to BMO or Percival Molson. Wanted to finish off my CFL road trip, and why? What better way than to do it all in one weekend?
Nice.
Now, this will make all nine stadiums that you will have visited on your trip. Like once this trip is done, you will have visited all nine CFL stadiums, correct?
No, I will have. I haven't been to IGF, but I have been to Winnipeg for a game. I've been to all eight stadiums that are, I guess, the other eight. The only one that will be left will be Ottawa, which I'm going to in November.
Ah, there you go.
So I won't actually close off the CFL passport until then, but at least I get the rest of them off the list before that, because that's been booked for I guess months now.
Now you guys are way ahead of me, anyways. I haven't gone anywhere east except for for old Ivor Wynn, so it's I haven't been out there yet. At least I can say I've been to Moncton.
I have not.
Yeah,
I'll wait till the Atlantic Schooners actually join the CFL, and I'll get out there for sure.
There you go, and then watch them play in Quebec City.
I can see it too.
We of all weeks to bring you in, four straight losses by the Alouettes, another cluster that is called the West Coast trip. I don't follow Rider history all that much, but this is not a shot. I know Riders were not doing that well in Montreal, but I mean, have the Riders ever had a situation where they've gone 2-15 in a certain city and all this time?
I don't know if they've had one that's that bad. I don't do much in the way of past stats. That is definitely not my my area of expertise. But one thing I know for certain is anytime we go into Edmonton, it's marked down as a loss. It's always been that way. That's the one stadium that stands out in my head as the one that you just know what's going to happen.
Right.
Until, you know, last game for some unknown reason, but I don't think of any, that, you know, that much of a guarantee, but
actually I'm looking at it here. The Riders actually were 3-14 in 3-14 in Montreal.
Yeah, that was going to be my next guess was Montreal, but for some reason I thought we won there a few more times than that. But now that I'm thinking about it, no, Montreal has always had our number.
I think it's always been vice versa though when we come over to Mosaic. So I mean it's
only fair.
I don't know what it is about this East West thing, but anyways, I mean it's Cliff, you saw me. I was, again, and I'm such a good Alouettes fan. We're like, oh, hey, I am not going to show up on the podcast this week. You know it's bad when I am swearing at the team on Twitter, and I don't swear at the team on Twitter.
No, you were fit to be tied. There is no question about that. In fact, I'm actually pretty surprised you actually bothered to step and watch the game, because typically you just tend to say, you know what, this is a guaranteed loss. I'm just going to PVR it and I'll watch it the next day and then delete it in anger, which I was completely prepared for, because I figured, okay, I'm going to stay up and watch the game. And then I notice, oh, it's like almost midnight and Tim's still tweeting very angrily too. So I guess he's going to stick it out, but wow. And yeah, I don't think anybody was impressed by that, by that display.
I stopped at halftime. You ever been at that point, Steve, where you're just like, there's no way I'm going to watch this game? I mean, you can be a season ticket holder for an X amount of years like I have, you know, for more than two decades. But it's like you just get to that point where you're like, am I turning into an Atlanta Braves fan? You know, I mean, I just can't watch this stuff anymore.
I've never turned off a game, but there's been a lot of times, and you're talking to a guy who's a fan of a team that's won four cups in 100 plus years.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of times where I've sat on the couch staring at the TV and I don't even know what's going on, but outright turned off or wanted to. Yeah. Yeah. I've wanted to.
Yeah. And Cliff, I think you're just the glutton, right?
What can I say? I gotta see it through. I can't half-ass anything, right? I gotta see things to the bitter end. And Lord knows every time, I mean, as I said in the alternative, I'm not surprised that the Alouettes lost in BC. I am surprised at just how poor of an effort it was, because there really wasn't a whole lot to be positive about. I mean, especially that first half was just complete, utter, hot garbage. There's just no other way to describe it.
Well, it seemed to be promising that we were going to be actually, you know, score 6 points in the first half, and then the block field goal for a touchdown. To me, that was the last straw. I mean, from
what killed me though was actually I saw some tweets online. As soon as Travis Lule got hurt, and they end up I don't know what the extent of the damage was, because they still haven't come out really and said, they've said that the season's over,
right,
essentially because of his injury. But they said, oh well, the Alouettes' chances of winning just got exponentially better because because Travis Lule got hurt. I'm like,
let's say, do you not know the history of the team in BC? The only time that they were, you know, break the streak is when they played at a stadium that technically didn't exist anymore, but only existed for a year back in Empire. So I mean, it's New Empire. So it's I don't know. I mean, as a third party watcher of the CFL, Steve, I mean, what is wrong with these Alouettes? I mean, it's, they can't score. They played absolutely horrible. I mean, they have former Riders quarterback Darian Duran. I mean, it's not just Darian. It just seems to be a whole bunch of stuff that's really just happening with this team that's not going right.
To me, the one thing that stands out, and I hate to use a Henry Burris quote as a Rider fan, but I think the problem is leadership. I think they're missing it. And when you have your head coach throwing your quarterback under the bus and your quarterback throwing his teammates under the bus, it's just, there's something wrong in the locker room to me. I mean, I don't get the chance to watch as many Alouettes games as I'd like. So I kind of rely a lot on on Clippy's blog for one. And
yeah,
you know, I just, that's what stands out to me. I mean, I wasn't disappointed when the Riders traded Darian Durant. I thought there would be a drop off. I didn't expect it to be a cliff.
No pun intended, Cliff.
It was too quick. And I think they went veteran across the board to try and win now in a spot where I don't think they were ready to win now. which really hurts for the future.
It does. I mean, I don't, you know, Willie is not our future. Our future's been basically our entire future's been traded away to Regina. I mean, that's what it's
saying. And we appreciate it. Like. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Well,
it's payback for 2009 and 2010. Gift happily accepted.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. They're you got rid of the young guys and kept Drew Willie and Darian Durant. And I mean, we love Darian Durant out here. Well, most of us.
Well, he's still the most popular person in Saskatchewan, isn't he?
He is. Yes. And you know what? Who would have guessed that the starting quarterback somewhere else would beat the backup quarterback in Regina? Because that's always been the number one.
Oh, man. I mean,
we all want to see him do well.
Right. And I'm not putting the blame on Durant either. It's just that, I mean, I think we're getting more production out of the quarterback based on what he's done this year. It's just a matter of all the weapons that we have in the house. They added somebody else today to the practice roster, another wide receiver, as if we need another one. And it just... something's not there. The running game's not there. These guys are not catching passes, or it's, you know, usually they had the first 15 plays are scripted. Usually when it comes to pro football, I think it's just a matter of what's happened to the running game. You need to do something to break up the monotony, because obviously if you get back by too much, like the Owls were this week, you can't use the running game anymore. It's a no brainer. They have to pass in order to do something. So it's just a matter of what can this team do to right the ship, so to speak? I mean, they have a chance this week.
Well, and I think this is this has all the potential to be a blessing in disguise, is the injury to Trevor Harris last week now has Drew Tate, who lost his last two starts in Montreal when he was with the Stampeders. I mean, he's got just as many good weapons at his disposal with Ottawa that he did when he was with Calgary. I just don't think – I never have thought that – Drew Tate was as good as what everybody else made him out to be. And I've been proven right time and time again. You still have Drew Tate truthers, believe it or not, though. That's what really blows my mind, is that there's still people that think that you could build around Drew Tate. You should try to trade for Drew Tate. I'm like, no, just like Drew Willie, what you see with Drew Tate is what you're going to get. Maybe there's something with being named Drew. Could that be it? Like, if your name is Drew, you're automatically a middling at best quarterback. Could that be it? I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
Well, it sounds like you're making a reference to Drew Bledsoe too now.
Well, you know what? He does have a Super Bowl ring.
But I would think that the Drew Tate would thing, and Steve, I'm curious to what you think about this too, is that when it comes to Drew Tate, I think it's how he lost his starting job. I mean, you could say the same thing happened to Lule, but yeah, it's a lot different, I guess, when you're under Wally in BC. It just something just seemed to go wrong, and you know, these players just go along the wayside, and they become, you know, they were a star, then they become a perennial backup.
And Drew Tate is a solid backup, but he is a solid backup for a reason. I mean, nobody wants to rely on Drew Tate. If Montreal can't beat Drew Tate this weekend, I'd be a little concerned. But I've actually got them winning by 10. So you're welcome.
Hey, I'll take that.
Steve, I want to ask you about as you know, like obviously we're going through a bit of a malaise, if you will, when it comes to this whole Cavis Reed / Jacques Chapdelaine thing. And you've kind of experienced a bit of an upheaval yourself over the past couple of years with the addition of Chris Jones, who's pretty much assumed every possible role in the Riders organization.
And sounds familiar to somebody who used to be here.
But, I mean, he's sort of made the team over in his own image, and he doesn't give a rat's ass what you think about it. Now you're starting to sort of see the fruits of that labor. I mean, if you were to say to Alouettes fans, like, trust the process, you know, give your people time, would you say it's well worth it for that? Or did you guys just get extremely lucky that Chris Jones just did what he did and now it's only starting to pay off?
Now, my question for you is, do you want my I like Alouettes fans and don't want to upset them answer, or the honest answer?
Just give the honest answer. I mean, you know, it's not like we had 93 other people on our practice roster.
That's fair. Yeah, that's your mistake. You need a pre-practice roster.
see that's where you're screwing up.
See, my thing with with Chris Jones. Right from the start, I was on the Chris Jones bandwagon because I saw right away that there was a plan for the future. He was getting rid of the aging vets and bringing in some youth other than a quarterback until this year. Like there was a plan in mind, and you could see it slowly happening over the course of last year. And then to start this year, same thing. I see the opposite happening in Montreal, and that scares me a little bit because he got rid of some quality vets like a Javon Johnson. I mean, Duron Carter, obviously not his fault, you know, picked up Darian Durant. Like there just doesn't seem to be that same plan for, you know, 2018 and going forward, which is great if 2017 is successful, but obviously so far it hasn't been. I want to say trust the process for you guys, but I'm not sure if I do or if I would.
It always seems to be for us the past couple of years since AC's retired, it's been, you know, this guy is the guy. But, you know, we saw the stat the other day of how many people that the Alouettes have had under center since AC retired. And we've had some good quarterback, but they just haven't given it a shot. Unfortunately, it's, you know, it's not 96, 97 again, where we have a Tracy Ham and we have a head coach who's willing to let them teach a younger quarterback what to do. Because remember, when AC came in, he was not that well, you know, he had not been a very good quarterback. Mind you, he played in, you know, bad Hamilton teams and in Las Vegas. So it's, we just got to get out of this rut. I mean, Cliff, does it mean just making the playoffs? Can even if making the playoffs this year, does it make it a successful season, though?
It really doesn't, because again, you take a look at last year. The Ottawa Redblacks won the Grey Cup. They were 8-9-1. Several years ago, the Calgary Stampeders were 8-10 and won the Grey Cup. Yeah. I mean, the record doesn't mean anything. Would you say it's a successful season? Sure, you won the Grey Cup. By sheer definition, that is that's the pinnacle of a successful season, is winning your league championship. But you take a look at the record. You take a look at the fact that you're under 500. Even being at 500 shouldn't be something to aspire to. I remember at the start of the year when we were talking about predictions, so to speak, and we said, well, what's reasonable for the Alouettes? And I said 9-9 is more than reasonable. That's not something we should be aspiring to. Now this year, I think we'd be hard-pressed, quite frankly, to get to 7-11 to equal what we did last year. But you know what? Just because of how god-awful the Eastern Division is, 7-11 really truly could clinch first place and a bye. If that doesn't scare the crap out of you, if you're in the Canadian Football League, I don't know what will. Like, you don't want to celebrate mediocrity, but my word, I mean, this is like nothing I've ever seen before as far as just how just really – I don't want to say really bad, because they're not really bad, but just not really good. All four teams in the Eastern Division are really not good. And fans out west, I feel, because especially Saskatchewan too, like right now they're technically in last place. But you moved them over to the east, they'd be world beaters in comparison to the other four teams in the east. So it's such a weird dichotomy right now for the Canadian Football League.
Steve, do you agree with the garbage that some fans are spouting, that they should just do away with the divisions and just go with one giant league?
If you want to celebrate football, yes. But to grow the league, they can't. Until the East is steady, the last thing they want to do is have five West teams and one Eastern team making the playoffs.
Right.
That would kill fan bases out East, you know. I don't agree with that. As nice as the one division sounds, I'm not a fan. And it obviously this year it hurts my team, because if we had one division, the Riders are more or less guaranteed a playoff spot at this point, the way the season is going.
I think that's one huge plus, though, I think, when it comes to the CFL, and I wish some other leagues that I follow would do the same thing. I love the crossover. The crossover allows the league, no matter where it is, which division it is, that you still have a shot to make the playoffs even this late in the season, even though you may be fourth in your division. That's the positive thing. I mean, sure, the West has dominated the crossover, but that's, you know, you don't see anybody complaining about baseball right now. There are, if you look at most of the divisions in baseball, you have two good teams that are over 500, and the rest of them are under 500. It's crazy. I mean, you don't hear people talking about, oh, we need to totally blow up baseball and change how the divisions are. No, it's
No, but what they did do in baseball was they added that second wild card spot, which to me is right on par with the CFL's crossover rule. At least it gives team fans in that kind of just about to make the playoffs role a little bit of hope going into the end of the year.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, to just give the best, what is it, 12 teams in baseball make the playoffs? I think it's 10. Either way, to give the best, 10 teams, no matter what division they're in baseball, going into the playoffs would be terrible for that league. No different than having the best six, regardless of division in the CFL.
Yeah, because as we are saying, anything can happen in the playoffs. I mean, we've seen over the past couple of years with the Jays getting back into the playoffs, but another sport, that's for another time, or maybe another podcast, but not for this one right now. Getting out of BC, guys, it's obviously the Alouettes are licking their wounds. What needs to be done in order for this team to become relevant again? Is that a fair word to use?
I guess relevance. I mean, I don't know if that's the word we want to use. I think at the end of the day, like I've always said, winning football games cures everything. It'll eventually cure all the problems that the Alouettes team is facing right now. All can be cured if they just go on a bit of a run. I mean, at least at this point, a two-game winning streak would be better than nothing. At least it would be something to talk about. At least just get fans a little bit more excited. I mean, most of the home games are pretty well finished. I think we've got 3 home games left, including this coming Sunday.
Yeah, that's tough, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like they're – I mean, unless you are going to try for that playoff push, because like I said, right now, 2 Eastern teams are going to make the playoffs and host games as well. So, I mean, if you really want to try and build something, anything in the slim hope that you are going to host a playoff game in Montreal, then you definitely got to do whatever it takes to win games, whether it's letting certain players go or making trades because the trade deadline is coming up in about a month's time. Checking to see the castoffs from the NFL now, because now people are slowly starting to be added to rosters. Any number of things. I mean, I'm still very much of the belief that this coaching staff right now is really not drawing a whole lot of confidence. It's not really inspiring a whole lot right now. And I'm still very much of the opinion that this team needs a real honest-to-goodness offensive coordinator, because Jacques Chaplin hasn't really shown to me, or anybody else really for that matter, that he can handle both the head coaching and the calling of plays, designing a playbook that actually means something. I'm still not seeing any of that. And with every passing game, I just feel like there's just that hope that this is all going to turn around just seems to dim further and further. So, I mean, I think that's going to be the big thing, not just for this season, but just going forward, is taking a good long look at what this Alouettes coaching staff has become. And if changes need to be made, then that's probably where I would start, quite frankly. I mean, players come and go, and some fit into the system, some don't, and that gets figured out in time. But I mean, you can have, like, we've proven, like, we've got the talent on this team. We've got some very talented football players on this team, and they're not doing a bloody thing. I can't help but think it's a lot of it is due to the fact that these plays that are being drawn up are just terrible. They've been terrible for years, and it just feels like we're arranging deck chairs more than anything else. It's like, okay, well, this guy didn't work as coach. Well, we're just going to have this guy who was the receivers coach, let him be the offensive coordinator / head coach. How about this guy? Let's move this guy over here. And it's still the same thing over and over again. And I think that's what's really frustrating more than anything else, is that you're making changes for the sake of making changes, but we're not seeing any results, any sort of positive results as a result of all these moving around and shifting things around. So quite frankly, I would, if I were to venture a guess and really decide where I'd want to focus all my attention, that honestly, like the coaching staff, I think really truly needs to have a good long look and see what needs to be done about trying to improve at that point. Cause if you improve that, if you get the right players wanting to play in a proper system, that's where you get that winning attitude. We get that winning mindset, and good things will eventually start to happen. That's truly how I feel about it.
Steve, Cliff brought up a great suggestion last week about what if we still had Jeff Garcia on the team as a coach. Do you think he would have made a difference if he would have continued on as a coach with us?
Maybe, but what was funny to me with Cliff's little mini rant kind of thing there was you sounded exactly like we sounded 5 games ago or 4 games ago, right after our beatdown in BC. Like it's almost mimicking point for point, you know, players not being put in position, talented players on the roster not playing, coaches making questionable decisions. To me, the biggest thing is that winning streak that you mentioned, because that's how quickly things can change.
Yeah.
5 weeks ago up in Saskatchewan, all we were hearing was fire Chris Jones. Chris Jones has to go. We're done with Chris Jones. We were 2-4. We go 3-1, and suddenly it's everybody loves Chris Jones. And that same thing can happen in Montreal because they do have the players to win. They do have talent on that roster. And a couple of wins changes everything.
It really does.
Let's hope to get it. Looking for something different from your snacks? Grab a bag of Bad Monkey Popcorn. Bad Monkey Popcorn is produced locally in Montreal in a number of mouth-watering flavors that will have your taste buds wanting more after just one kernel. Now available throughout Quebec in most major grocery stores, independent outlets, and selected cities across Canada. For more information, head to badmonkeypopcorn.com. And on the line with us now to talk some Alouettes football from TSN 690 and a multitude of other platforms, which we'll talk about a little bit, is Joey Alfieri. Welcome, sir. Thanks for joining us and coming back.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Let's talk about the debacle, which is the West Coast, or which we can just call really the Alouettes. I mean, it's just really tough to be an Alouettes fan right now just by looking at this team with so much promise coming into the season, you know, getting Darian Durant and all these new wide receivers, et cetera. And it just really isn't gelling, Joey. I mean, what is going on with this team?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think this team, and people often scoff when I say this, but I actually think this team has talent. Like, I think it's really a talented team. I was speaking to somebody, you know, a prominent player in the East Division, somebody who, you know, carries quite a bit of clout on another team, who told me that, in his mind, the Alouettes are the most talented team in the East Division. So, and I don't disagree with that. You know, I know Ottawa's got some talent, obviously. I know that Toronto has some talent as well. Obviously, a very, very capable head coach. And, you know, Hamilton is what they are. But, again, I don't think the Alouettes are nearly this bad. You know, I don't think this is a 3-8 football team. They've lost a lot of close games. But lately, I mean, you can tell their confidence is really, really shaken. And I think the biggest thing right now is just putting certain players in a position to succeed. And I don't think the Alouettes, the staff anyway, have necessarily done that very much. And look, I know some of this falls on the players, but I think the offensive play calling, I think it needs to be better. You know, you got to get Ernest Jackson involved. And I said this from week one. Mm-hmm. You know, they haven't gotten him involved. And, you know, in the second half of that game against BC, you know, they line him up in the backfield and, he goes out for a pass in the flat. He ends up scoring a touchdown on the play. But you can't have your big ticket receiver finish a game with, three catches for 14 yards. You know, if this was the first time it happened all season, I'd say, it's just a blip on the radar, but it's just happened too often. They're not productive enough on offense to ignore their best receiver.
Now, Joey, do you think that as far as Darian Durant goes, I mean, when the Alouettes signed him back traded for him back in January and eventually signed him, we were more or less promised the Darian Durant of old. And by and large, we have not gotten it. Do you think it's something to do with how Durant's approaching the game, or do you think it's were the fans sold a bill of goods when it came to Darian Durant?
No, you know what? I know the popular opinion right now is to say that Durant is finished and he's washed up. And look, he's not the player he once was. I think everybody knew that. You know, as a guy who came into the season as a 34-year-old, recently turned 35. I don't think Darian Durant has been particularly good. I think there's been a lot of throws and mistakes and reads that have kind of been head-scratchers, but I mean, we've got to call a spade a spade. I mean, he doesn't necessarily have a ton of help around him lately. You know, I mean, the Alouettes haven't lost these 4 games in a row just because their quarterback was bad. I mean, the offensive line, and I know they've had to move things around on the offensive line because of injuries, but I mean, the offensive line has been pretty bad. You know, they can open up holes in the running game. Darian Durant hardly has time to throw the ball. It's been a really tough stretch. So, look, I wasn't expecting to get, the 27, 28, 29-year-old Darian Durant. I think, he hasn't been great. But, again, I'm not willing to even, think about a quarterback change. I don't think Darian Durant is the number one issue on this football team. I think he still has game left. I don't think he's as washed up as, you know, people think he is.
Hey, you talk about Darian Durant. We look at the other quarterbacks that are now on the Alouettes roster. I mean, is Drew Willey the go-to person for the future, or do you think Kavis Reed made a mistake in letting two great quarterbacks go via trade, or just releasing them outright?
Well, look, I mean, time will tell. I think there's a lot of untapped potential in Vernon Adams, but I mean, is he going to reach that ceiling? I mean, I don't know. I have my doubts. You hear a lot of things, you know, around the Owls organization, even when he was there, you know, some people in the organization feel like maturity was a really, really big issue with him. And, you know, if the guy who has the keys to the Ferrari isn't, you know, the most mature guy, you know, on the field, and you know, if your quarterback's basically not the most mature guy in your huddle and on your sideline, I mean, that's a bit of a problem. So,
right.
Look, I know Vernon Adams made people miss, and, you know, the games he did play last year, there were some times where he made some really great plays. I do think he's very much a work in progress. That doesn't mean that I don't think he's going to be good. I think, you know, there is some upside there. It would be silly to think otherwise. I don't think he's as much of a slam dunk as, you know, Rider Nation might make him out to be right now, or, you know, even how some disgruntled Owls fans make him out to be right now. I think, you know, he's a young quarterback. He's still very young, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done here before, you know, he becomes a CFL starting quarterback, you know, if that ever happens at all. Look, in terms of Brandon Bridge, I mean, it was kind of the same thing. He was disgruntled. He wanted to be higher up on the depth chart. And I know he had a really nice week last week, but, you know, at the same time, he was another guy. Mechanically, there's some issues there. Maybe he turns out to be something really, really good, and the Alouettes will have missed out. But again, I think, you know, we can't read too much into just, you know, 1 week or a couple of weeks of success coming off the bench, because, you know, again, when Rakeem Cato, you know, I don't have to tell you guys, when Rakeem Cato made his first start, I think everyone anointed him, you know, the heir apparent, you know, the guy who was going to fly the Alouettes to many, many successful years. And I mean, look where we are now. He's not even in the league anymore. So, I mean, with quarterbacks, you can't get wrapped up in, you know, short sample sizes. You have to look at it long term. And I'm not willing to say the Alouettes made mistakes with those guys just yet. And as for Drew Willey, I mean, look, he's 30. I think at this point, we know what Drew Willey is. I have no issue with Willey being the backup quarterback, but, you know, at a certain point, if the Alouettes don't keep, you know, if the Alouettes don't start winning games and they get bounced, you know, I'd like to see what Matt Schultz can do, and I'd like to see what Antonio Pipkin can do. You know, those are two young guys on the roster, and it's great to have Durant, it's great to have Willie, but if you're, you know, whenever they are out of it, or, you know, if they are out of it at all, and that's not to say they don't have a chance, because they still have a chance to make the playoffs, but if ever that day comes where they're out of it, I mean, I'd like to see the young quarterbacks play as well.
Now, you were talking earlier about the coaching staff and some of the decisions that were made and everything that I'm of the opinion that this team is in dire need of a real, honest-to-goodness offensive coordinator. Would you say that's a fair assessment, or do you really think that Jacques Chaplain can turn things around while holding both head coaching and offensive coordinator duties?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, Cliffy, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you're going to strip the head coach of the offensive play calling and keep him around? I mean, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I mean, I know it's a CFL and wacky things happen, but I mean, that would be curious. And I mean, the simple answer is I don't know if you can turn it around. I mean, again, I've had the same concerns since week one. You know, they don't necessarily push the ball up the field enough. And I understand that, you know, lately Durant hasn't had a ton of time back there. But I mean, there's other CFL teams that have, you know, bad offensive lines or bad offensive line play that are able to stretch the field and come up with big plays more frequently than the Alouettes are. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And, you know, for a guy who's, you know, an offensive mind who has the experience that Chaptalain has, again, I mentioned it before, but I'm really, really disappointed in the way that they've used Ernest Jackson. And I just think, you know, to me, it's clear that, you know, he has made mistakes this season. There's no doubt about it. Jackson has. But at the same time, they're just more dynamic when he has the ball in his hands or when he's involved. I mean, I'll take you back to the double overtime loss to Winnipeg at home a couple weeks ago. Ernest Jackson had no catches until the final drive of the first half. And that was that drive where the Alouettes scored their first touchdown of the game and, you know, got the ball rolling against Ottawa. You know, you get creamed at home 32-4. And Ernest Jackson has one target in the first half. He finishes the game with four targets and two catches. His last catch came in the last 30 seconds of the game. I mean, it's just things that don't make sense. So, you know, can he turn it around? Yeah, Jacques Chablon has a ton of experience. You know, he there's potential for them to turn it around. But, I mean, we're running out of time here. If he hasn't figured out how to get Ernest Jackson the ball by now, you know, I mean, when is he going to figure it out? We're 12 weeks into the season.
Or anybody else. What do you think is happening with the offense itself? I know we're talking about the, you know, do we need a change at OC or whatnot? But, I mean, Joey, I mean, this season, in the first half, the Alouettes are averaging 4.7 points in the first half. 4.7 points in the first half. And during their four-game losing streak, they're averaging 1.75 points. What does this take? Because as we know, you do need to score in order to win. What does this team need to do? Is it the running game? Because that's down. We have a great running back, a pair of running backs. What needs to be done?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. Again, I think you need to get your primary guys involved early. And during this four-game losing streak, by the way, no points in the first quarter, which, you know, I mean, you're pretty much behind the eight ball from the beginning. So, look, man, I mean, I wish I had an X's and O's answer for you to break it down and whatnot. To me, I think it's just about putting, you know, certain players in position to make plays. And I just, you know, I don't know if they did that against BC. I don't know if they've really done that all year. I really don't think they have. And, you know, lately Cunningham's been, you know, last 2 weeks, he's been the leading receiver on the Owls, you know, in each of those two games. And, you know, he's come up with a couple of big plays. But outside of that, you know, again, last Friday night in BC, Tyquan Underwood, nowhere to be found in the first half, finishes the second half with 73 yards. And, you know, he would have basically had 140 had Ernest Jackson not taken a hand to the face penalty on the Underwood 70-yard touchdown. So, I mean, it's just about getting those guys involved early, playing with a sense of, you know, a sense of pride from the beginning, being ready to go right from the beginning. And look, by no means am I just blaming the coaching staff. No. I think the coaching staff has a big, big part to play in this. But, I mean, at a certain point, you know, the guys need to be ready to go as well. And I think the offensive line needs to be better. Quarterback needs to be better. Receivers need to be better. Running back needs to be better. But, you know, it's concerning because you've gone from losing all these games, you know, by a small margin to now all of a sudden you're getting blasted week in and week out. You know, in two of these four games during the losing streak, they've scored 6 points or less. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to win games in the CFL with 6 points or less. You're not going to win in any league with 6 points or less. So, look, I think it's just a question of getting ready. And it's a good point that you bring up. Those stats are really good because, I mean, there's really just been a handful of games where they've gotten off to good starts. Yeah. You know, I think of the game in Edmonton where they got off to a good start, but they crumbled, you know, near the end of that game and they end up losing. So, again, they've got to come out here. And I hope, you know, for their sake, Sunday against Ottawa, it's at home. Ottawa just pounded you at home not too long ago. You know, you've got to have revenge on your mind here. The first place is still up for grabs. Second place is still up for grabs.
Right.
You know, it's about putting these things behind you and just moving forward.
Well, it's a matter of just taking advantage of the fact, which the Owls didn't do the last time that they came to town. Same thing with Toronto. But, you know, Drew Tate is there, going to be their backup quarter, going to be their starter most likely. One follow-up question before I let Cliffy ask his question. Talk about wide receivers and Tyquan Underwood. What do you think it has to do with, because he's not getting a lot of the balls, do you think it has something to do with how the depth chart is set up? Because the last two games he's been behind, which seems to be the guy, you know, they called Cahoon Velcro hands. Well, unfortunately Jaguar seems to be concrete hands. Is it a matter of being able to switch those two up, or are they really stuck because of the way that the roster and the ratio is set up?
Right. Well, I mean, the only reason they've actually been able to get him on the roster lately is because they've gone back to a Canadian guard,
right.
Or they had a Canadian guard last week because Jeremy Lewis for a while was starting at left guard, and you know he wasn't necessarily playing that position at a high level, but just because, you know, he was a body that was around that they were forced to play him there. Look, I mean, Underwood, he does have his moments. I mean, he is limited to a certain point. He does drop the ball on occasion, but I think, you know, for the most part, given his utilization this season, I think he's been, you know, relatively productive. So I think it's pretty clear. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, he is one of the five best receivers, you know, on the roster. It's just, it's unfortunate because, you know, there is that whole American-Canadian ratio thing that you need to respect. And look, I mean, as bad as Sam Jagr has been, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's been good because he's been awful. I mean, you're still talking about a guy who missed all of training camp. You're talking about a guy who missed the beginning or, you know, a good chunk of the season thus far. But at a certain point, you know, we're in the business of winning football games here, or the Alouettes are anyway. I'm not, but the Alouettes are. And, you know, I think George Johnson, you know, young Canadian guy, CFL rookie, is, you know, relegated to bench duty on Sam Jagr's reputation alone. And I don't think that's right. You know, just George Johnson is, you know, take the touchdowns aside. I just think he's been, you know, a sure-handed, big-body Canadian receiver. And I think he's done really, really well since he's been in there. And I think he gives you a better chance to win right now. And I don't understand why he's on there, but why he's not on there. But I'm with you guys. You know, I think Underwood, for what, you know, the amount of snaps he's played, I think he's been really productive. And, you know, again, the Owls are 3-8 right now. So you need to find some answers quickly. So, you know, tweak things as best you can, but you can't keep waiting for, you know, guys to round into form here. Sam Jagr is going to have to figure it out. He's going to have to be way, way more productive than he's been so far this year, because Montreal needs wins. And, you know, there's no mincing words there. I mean, it just, that's what it is right now. So you can't wait. You know, you just can't wait for guys to round into form, like I said. So, you know, they've got to figure it out, whether that's getting Underwood more snaps, you know, taking Jagr out, tweaking the ratio, whatever it is. You know, whatever it is right now, they have to do it because they're in dire need.
All right. October 11th, 2017. That's the official CFL, the day of the official CFL trading deadline. Let's play fantasy general manager for just a moment.
Okay.
You've got free reign, Joey. You're Kavis Reed. You've got free reign. People are willing to make deals with you. Money is always an object, but in this case, it's not an object.
What's other people's money, Cliffy, I got to tell you.
Fair enough. Who do you go out and get that would really make an immediate impact? And like, what area would you approve on immediately? And what deal would you make, if possible?
Again, I like to fortify. I mean, I really would like to fortify the offensive line. And I already like to pick up a Xavier Fulton. I think the one thing that can do is, I mean, look, he's an import tackle. He's a guy who has experience, you know, playing on the left side. I like that move that they made. But the one thing I'll tell you right now, before I make any deals, the one thing I'd look into, you know, getting Fulton some work at left tackle, and I'd get Olafioye playing his natural, more comfortable right tackle position. I think that's something I would look at this point. And then I think I would go out and, you know, I would try to spend some money or make a trade for a guard. It's just, it's not easy to get a quality Canadian guard in this league. I mean, they're just, nobody wants to give quality offensive linemen up. You know, I mean, usually you go out and you acquire projects or, you know, guys who, you know, were young and they still need some development. But, you know, I think that's obviously something I would do. And then I would go out and get a young quarterback. I mean, I really would. And I know they don't grow on trees, but, you know, I mean, the Franklin and Edmonton, I mean, he's young. Every time he's gone in there, he's played really well. So I know a lot of people are talking about Collaros to Montreal, but, you know, I mean, that's $500,000 plus that guy's making. I know Franklin, I believe Franklin's going to be a free agent at the end of the season, but, you know, I think that's a move. And again, it's really tough in the CFL because by the time the guy's figured out the playbook and whatnot, I mean, you really run out of time. But, you know, I think maybe a guy like Franklin in Edmonton, I think that could be interesting. You have a starting quarterback. And I think that's one guy that Montreal should target. You know, it's easier said than done. I don't know if you'll have NFL options at the end of the year, but, you know, if you can trade for him and get him signed, you know, I think that's something. But again, I'm just telling you, I just want to remind you guys that I don't think Darian Durant is the biggest problem on this football team. Mm. So they're going to need to upgrade around the quarterback, whoever that is, on offense if they want to, you know, if they want to be successful. But right now, I mean, I guess I would go, I would swing Fulton to left. I would put Olafioye on the right. I would try to find myself a good Canadian guard, which is easier said than done. And then I'd go out for a young quarterback like Franklin. Is that too much money, Cliffy? Have I busted the bank?
Well, as I said, money was no object, so.
Well, we all have to remember, too, do we have any first-round draft picks left? Or do they all go to BC?
Well, no, just the one. I mean, They're in line to have a good one here. If Hamilton keeps winning and the Owls keep losing, I mean, Montreal might pick first here. I mean, as of right now, they're picking second, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting draft pick for sure, but they need the Canadian depth. They can't afford to trade any more draft picks. That's the thing.
No, that's true.
True enough.
Before we let you go, Joe, we got to at least ask you about your new gig that's happening. Obviously, being on TSN 690, quite a bit of coverage across the board in sports. You also have the thing over at the guys that was at Three Down. And the newest thing, which we want to give at least a little bit of plug for, is The Athletic. Explain to people what The Athletic is, and if they want to get involved, how can they do it?
Yeah, well, so basically The Athletic, I'm sure everyone's heard by now, is a subscription-based website. And I think it's like, you know, it's under like $4 a month, you know, something like that. It's about $4 a month. And what it is just a bunch of quality writers who cover a number of different sports, and they're starting to sprout up in every NHL Canadian city. So every city in Canada that has an NHL team is going to have one. And, you know, there's going to be some CFL coverage as well. I know Toronto, they've already got some great articles there by Sean Fitzgerald, who's covering the Argonauts. And it's tough. You guys know how tough it is to come by quality Argonauts coverage.
Yeah.
You know, Montreal, I'm going to be doing some work. I have a story out there that actually went live on Monday. So, and then there's a ton of, you know, good football writers, good hockey writers. You know, Pierre LeBrun has made the jump over to The Athletic. You know, Arpin Basso was there. He used to be on NHL.com. Marc-Antoine Godin is a guy who worked for La Presse as a Canadiens beat writer. So that's just the Montreal branch. And obviously, if you subscribe, I mean, you have access to every city, right? So, I mean, Columbus has one. Toronto has one. There's a number of different cities that have Athletic, you know, coverage. Minnesota, St. Louis, you know, Los Angeles, the Los Angeles area has as well. So basically you subscribe. It's like I said, it's about $4 a month. I know there's a 30% promotional code going around, and you basically have access to quality coverage, like well thought out pieces. And so give it a read. I mean, if you have an opportunity to subscribe, I mean, check it out, check out my Alouettes article, give me some flack. If you agree, give me some flack. I'm all for criticism. So check out the article, check out the website. It really is good stuff.
Yeah. Anybody who wants to, if I'm reading it here, you actually get a 7-day free trial over at The Athletic.
Yeah.
And if you go from month to month, it's a different price. But if you, as you said, if you go for the yearly amount, a yearly subscription, it's, as I said, it's, I think it's less than $4. So it's,
yeah, it's less than $4 probably. Yeah.
So it seems to be, you know, with today's day of, I don't want to call it a firewall, because that's not what this is in this case, Joey. This is, as you said, this is reporting by people that you know you're going to get good news from, good stories, good insight, and good information. So it's completely different than what the paywall, newspapers are doing these days when it comes to paywalls, or only a certain amount of articles per day or per week.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes.
Okay. Any more questions for Joey before we let him go, Cliff?
I guess, where can we find you online, Joey?
You can find me too many places, probably. Twitter, you know, Twitter is at Joey Alfieri. Instagram is Joey_Alfieri. I actually have a Facebook page now, Joey Alfieri MTL. So pretty much on any social media platform, you could find me. Actually, the only one that I've held out on is Snapchat. I'm getting old. I don't know how these things work.
Snapchat? What's Snapchat?
Exactly.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time, man, and you're always welcome to come back on the show at any time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Hey, folks. We appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, alouettespodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
Now, it's funny, we're talking about wins and jobs and stuff like that. Interesting story that came over came through the Gazette today from Herb Zerkowski, who's the Alouettes beat writer. An interesting quote, because the Owls are hosting their yearly golf game. And Andrew Wettinall was interviewed, and he gives some very interesting quotes here, guys, specifically about the team and how he feels about it. But I think one of the main things that came across from this story was, and as was put in the title today, is that according to Andrew Whitenhall, nobody's job is safe. Now, the question is, if that were the case and the Owls were, let's say they don't win another game, do we blow up the team again, a new GM, new head coach, or does it just fall on the coaching staff itself?
Well, what makes me laugh is it was Andrew Whitenhall who more or less put this current regime together. There's a lot of people that really truly feel that Kavis Reed and Jacques Chaplin were put into place because they were more or less willing to toe the line, if you will. And I'm not saying that's actually the case, but that's kind of the perception that sort of came about when the news first broke that Kavis Reed was going to be hired as general manager. And it was more or less done with the understanding that he was to keep Jacques Chaptelain as the head coach. So in a sense, it was Andrew Whitenhall who sort of created this kind of tempest in a teapot, if you will. And now he's giving that sort of bluster about, oh, heads are going to roll if things don't improve and blah, 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 which, yeah, that sounds all well and good and everything. But I mean, like, you started this fire, buddy. I mean, truthfully, like, Andrew Whitenhall, I understand, like, as he takes over control of this football team from his father and starts making more of these decisions, yeah, he's going to have to be allowed to make mistakes. I get that. But for him to sort of come out and, I don't want to say throw anybody under the bus, but at the same time, if he's laying the blame for how poorly the Alouettes have been solely on the shoulders of Reed and Chaptelain, okay, that's fair. Lord knows they're the ones that more or less put this team together, but you're the one who's overseeing all of this. So you've got to be able to shoulder your part of the blame as well. I mean, if they were winning, you'd be more than happy to take your share of the credit. So I really hope that you're also willing to shoulder your portion of the blame for this as well, because at the end of the day, it's Andrew Whitenhall that more or less signs the checks for this organization. So you got to have a bit of accountability for this as well. So you're the one who oversaw this new regime. So you better be able to own this, your portion of this as well, as far as I'm concerned.
What do you think, Steve? I mean, when you hear an owner say that, I mean, is it the place for the owner? Because we've seen it before in the NFL and any other sports leagues where you may have an owner speak up. And, well, you know, Jerry Jones actually is a good example. Steinbrenner was a good example too when he was running the Yankees. Is it good for the players to hear this specifically coming from an owner that you're basically saying that you're not safe either way? Or is it just a rallying point of some sort where it's like, come on, guys, I'm saying everything that needs to be said, but this is what I really mean. I need you guys to win.
Well, first off, in a league where there's, 25 to 30% roster turnover every year, is anyone's job really safe in the CFL? But should an owner be making that kind of comment? It seems odd that he would say no matter what, you know, win or lose, jobs might not be as secure as you'd like. That just seems odd. That gives players really no incentive to go for the win, because now they're just playing for, you know, I don't want to say their job, but there's no pride there. They don't know if wins are going to be enough. To me, it seemed like an odd comment.
He did actually say, he goes, success on the field, wins and championships are by definition influential because they're the easiest benchmark anyone would use. It certainly helps everybody. He goes, quite frankly, this team could make the playoffs and we could make the determination change is appropriate because we could have made the playoffs much easier. The other side's true. Not making the playoff isn't the only benchmark or yardstick. So I guess he's trying to promote, obviously, that, yeah, you know, I think even the executives of the Owls thought that this team was going to be better than they were based on what they had on paper. And that's the problem, guys. Steve, you've seen it. Cliff, you've seen it in many, many sports where this team looks fantastic. They're going to run all the way to the championship because they look fantastic on paper. And then they shoot themselves in the foot and they look like, you know, hot garbage.
No, and again, the one thing that sort of doesn't sit right with me as far as Andrew Whitenhall making comments too is I'll go back as far as 2013. It was the Whitenhall family that oversaw the hiring of Dan Hawkins to replace Mark Trestman when Trestman bolted for the NFL. Since then, Andrew Wettenhall's been involved in a number of decisions because, again, as his father gets older, it's understandable that the son is going to want to take more and more control and prove that he can also lead, so to speak. But the decisions that have been made since 2013, the decisions that this football team has made, and they've made some very questionable decisions and haven't had a whole lot to show for it, really makes me wonder, like, what are you trying to prove exactly? Are you trying to prove that, yes, I do own a football team and I have complete say over everything? Like, that's wonderful. That's great. Good for you. Meanwhile, as you said, winning is the best benchmark to show whether your team is a success or not. And I hate to say it, but the Alouettes really haven't done a whole lot of winning the past 4 years. So I don't know what you're trying to accomplish. I just wonder, is winning one of those things? You say it is, and that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, like you said, these games are not played on paper. You look good on paper, but these games are not played on paper. So sooner or later, you've got to have to reap what you sow. And right now, all you've sown is a lot of what exactly? This is what I'm trying to understand more than anything else. Like, I'm willing to go along with any sort of theories and any sort of thought process that you can come up with. I'll listen. I'll try to understand. But at the end of the day, you still got to be able to answer for these things. And right now, the Alouettes haven't shown that they have a whole lot of answers. And as long as you keep instilling the wrong people and entrusting the wrong decision makers, things aren't going to get better. So I, like I said, you can say that nobody's job is safe and everything like that. Like, the only person whose job is safe is Andrew Wettenhall's, but because he's the owner, essentially. But as the owner, like, if you want to be the big boy and you want to make the real decisions, then you got to make decisions that maybe you don't like, but you got to decide what's really, truly best for the team. Like, do you want a bunch of yes men who will kowtow to your demands and your whims? Or do you want to swallow your pride and say, you know what? I really don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I'm going to bring in the people that really, truly know what's happening. And I may not like or understand every single one of their decisions, but you know what? If the proof's in the pudding and you show me that you know how to win, then I'll be more than happy to just stay in my lane. I'll sign the paychecks. I'll do whatever it takes to keep this football team successful on and off the field. And that's all there is to it. So I think I'm really hoping this season has been a real eye-opener for Andrew Wettenhall to see what has become of this Montreal Alouettes organization, because I know as a supporter of this team, it really doesn't feel good to be thought of as a laughingstock. I can only imagine what he's thinking as far as being the owner of said quote-unquote laughingstock. If it doesn't feel good for me, I can't imagine it feels good for him. But what's more important, feeling good about yourself because you can make these decisions, or realizing that, okay, you know what? I really messed up with a lot of things, but I'm going to do whatever it takes to make things right. And I think that's really the conversation that Andrew's going to have with himself, especially as he assumes more and more of the leadership and the ownership of this football team. This is something that he's just going to have to come to grips with. And the faster he does that and realizes what's going on, that's really going to be what's key for this football team going forward in the next 5, 10, 20 years.
Fair. Now, what about, and we're talking about, you say Andrew Wettenhall's job is safe. What about Patrick Boivin?
Who? Oh, the president of the Alouettes, who we don't ever hear from. Like, he's like, what's that character that, there's this like mythical character, like, I guess it's like Charlie from Charlie's Angels. Like, you don't see him, you don't hear of him. He just sort of pops up every once in a while. Like I thought I was looking at a ghost when I looked at the photos of the golf tournament today to see it. Oh my God, the president actually showed up. I mean, say what you will about Mark Waitman. Some of the decisions he made, maybe it may not have been the best decisions when he was president of the Alouettes, but you know what? He was at least visible. He actually at least made his presence known, and he at least was willing to listen to fans if they had something to say to him. Whereas where has the president of the Montreal Alouettes been all season? I haven't seen hide nor hair of him, really, truly. So, I mean, I don't want to, you know, necessarily throw shade on somebody, but like, where's this guy been? What's he doing to make this situation better? I mean, well, like, as last time I checked, the Alouettes are still not relevant, or as relevant as he'd like them to be. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know what he's doing to justify his position. I don't know what he's doing to make the Alouettes better off the field, because I don't expect him to make any on-field decisions to improve this team. That's Kavis Reed's job. That's Jacques Chaplin's job, to make this football team better on the field. But what has Patrick Boivin done since becoming president of the Alouettes that's noticeable? I mean, if he's doing stuff off the field that's, you know, going to help the team, that's great. I sincerely hope so, because last time I checked, that's what a president does. But I mean, I don't know what I have not seen anything that would suggest that he's anywhere close to a part of this organization. So yeah, I mean, you bring up his name and I'm like, yeah, and like,
yeah, no, I know. Steve, what did you expect, Dave, when you hear this type of thing at the talk, that you would rather hear it from the president and CEO of the team rather than from the owner itself, where something that an owner may say, whether it may be true or not, may actually may rub the players the wrong way?
I'm more of a fan of hearing from the people, especially when you're talking about football wins and losses and that sort of thing. I more want to hear from general manager, mm-hmm. owner. I don't think the president should have much to say, period. So I'm kind of, I guess I'm on the flip side of Clippy's comments. I don't really know what to say on that.
I mean, I was going to say, Cliff, is that, okay, he comes from, yes, he had his stint. I mean, he has an extensive history in pro sports. I mean, he was with the Canadiens, you know, he was 3 years as director of hockey operations with the Canadiens. He was also he assisted the general manager. He was did management contract negotiations with the AHL's club in Hamilton. But he also just recently came from a U Sports university where things are just, you know, yes, he was the director of recreation athletics for Concordia, but this is also again, it's a university. It's not a pro team. You know, yes, Concordia has had its issues when it comes to football recently. We can't just say it's just all football, but, you know, when it comes to football in Quebec now, you know, the French universities are really, they're really improving and they're really dominating. Is it something that he has to make a name for himself? I mean, it's because, again, yes, he has been invisible, but in the public's eye, what else can he do? I mean, other than what Wettenhall has done, what else Kavis Reed could say? What are the Chatelain could say? I mean, what could he do? I mean, it's, you're saying, you know, he's invisible. What else can he do?
Well, for one thing, be visible. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I said, if he's doing stuff behind the scenes that we don't see and we won't see the benefits of for, say, a year, it really makes it hard to judge as to what relevance he has to this organization. So, I mean, I guess part of me is sort of thinking, like, you know, some team presidents work better when they're not in the forefront, and some work better when you sort of when you actually see what they're doing and see the rewards as a result. I mean there's at least a few other, like, team presidents of other CFL teams that I sort of at least see, they're at least a little bit visible, like you sort of see a little bit what they're doing, whereas with Boivin, I just don't see what he's doing. So I mean, is he doing anything? Is he doing nothing? Like, I mean, like I said, we just don't know what's going on. So I mean, I can't say what can he do to be more visible when I don't know what he's doing. That's, I guess that's kind of, it's kind of like a, you know, the chasing your own tail kind of thing. But I guess I would just like to see a little bit more from him. I mean, if you're gonna keep bringing up his name as a point of reference, then okay, that's great. But what's he doing? I mean, at the end of the day, the focus should be more on the on-field product. So I guess in that sense, if you're not hearing from the president, that means good stuff must be happening in the background. And I don't see a whole lot of good happening in the background, because the last time I checked, we're still only drawing like 18,000 fans at Percival Molson Stadium. We're still seeing the same kind of boring stuff over and over again at the stadium. Aside from that, I mean, I just don't see anything that would sort of necessitate, you know, I just don't see anything that sort of would make me say, oh my God, that's what the president's doing, and he's doing a great job. All right. I'm not saying he's doing a bad job, because I don't know what he's doing. I think that's really what it comes down
answer.
To.
That's a fair answer.
Like, I can't, like, if you were to ask me, give him a grade, I'm like, incomplete. I mean, I just don't, I can't say anything bad about the guy, but I also can't say anything good about the guy. So I guess call it a push. Like, that's,
might as well.
I mean, I can see what Chaplin's doing. I can see what Reed's doing. I can grade those guys on what I've seen based on what I expect a general manager and a head coach of a football team to do. But as far as what a president does, I can only speculate. He might be doing a good job. He might not be doing a good job. But I just don't know. Maybe we won't know until, say, next year when the team does this or does that. And we either like it or we hate it, because that's how we are in Montreal. There's nothing is ever kind of, meh, that's all right. We either love it with full passion or we hate it with full passion. Like, that's just the way we roll here. And I guarantee Rider Nation can definitely appreciate that too, because I'm sure, Steve, there's no shades of gray as far as what you expect out of the team, right? It's either black or white in that sense, or red or green and white in that sense.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. There's no three sides to anything. Everything is, you're a Chris Jones lover or Chris Jones hater. You're a huge fan or you're off the bandwagon. There's no in between here. It's no different.
I still think it's a little bit different, though, when you come to Rider Nation, though, Steve. I mean, it's, you know, you don't have fans here who eat, drink, bleed red, white, and blue, except they do. If they do, then it's of our hockey team. You know, it's Rider Nation is a unique thing in itself, though.
That I can't disagree with. I mean, to me, it just seems normal because I've lived it my whole life. I mean, we treat, you said it best, we treat Rider Nation like you guys would treat the Canadians, or, you know, try and think of other examples off the top of my head. My brain is not working.
You could. No, you couldn't. That's the thing with Montreal.
There aren't a lot of fan bases like that. And to, you know, try and get, you know, fans out in Montreal or anywhere out east to be like Rider Nation isn't going to work. You can't do what we do. You need to do what works, I guess, for the local market, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Moving on, before we talk about the game this week, it's a quick thing, and we talked about this a little bit off air before we started the show this week. So the CFL, we find out, that has been testing outside of the game a new smaller ball, and there's no air quotes or anything. It actually, according to the specs that we got from Justin Dunk, it is a smaller ball. Slightly. It's circumference. And so they're all saying that it will lead to maybe bigger things, higher scores, maybe bring in some other players. What do you guys think about this, Steve? I'll start with you. I mean, yes, it's a football. It will still have its, you know, CFL staple with the stripes and whatnot. But changing the ball like this, do you really think it's going to make that much of a difference in the gameplay?
My guess is we're going to talk about it all off season if they decide to do it. And then after about a week and a half of watching CFL football, people aren't going to remember. It's going to be much ado about nothing. I know we've got our balls are bigger from years gone by, but in the end, it's going to be just a football. If it helps bring a little bit of extra offense, great, but it'll be forgotten quicker than anything. I don't see it being as major a deal as it seems to be pulling online, because a lot of people are, you know, attached to that because of that "our balls are bigger" slogan from, God, was that 15 years ago?
Yeah,
closer to 20, actually.
Yeah, it's just after the failed U.S. expansion.
And I get it. It's a staple of the CFL. We've always been able to do that, but if you put the two balls side by side outside of the, you know, the raised laces, you're not going to notice much of a difference. I don't think people would, for the most part, would be able to tell the difference between a, you know, a Canadian football or CFL ball and an NFL ball. In the end, it's a ball. We're still going to be there cheering teams on, and I probably won't put up much of a fight.
Cliff, you? I mean, no balls about it, or?
I'm pretty ambivalent to it myself. I mean, I can see why. There's always things that need to be changed within the game. There's always things that need to be sort of tweaked, and I guess it's part of the evolution, if you will, of football in general. I mean, like, you see things like equipment changes being made and things being done to improve player safety and whatnot. And usually, like, the football, it's one of those things that just sort of gets forgotten until you have news like this, where they talk about taking the one thing that makes the Canadian Football League so unique is the fact that they have a slightly bigger playing ball than what they do down south. Like, that's sort of been one of those things that we sort of hung our hat on as far as Canadian identity goes, or one of the many things. I mean, but at the end of the day, I think Steve's right. I think, you know, some people are going to huff and puff about it and talk about how we're losing our identity and yada, yada. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to gameplay. And I guarantee you, like, once the ball is snapped into play, people aren't even going to be thinking about it. It's just going to come down to players are going to be able to play with a ball that they were a little more accustomed to when they were in college or university, or if they've ever been in the NFL. And once you catch that football, I mean, the touchdowns are going to be scored all the same anyways. And at that point, it's almost going to be a non-issue at that point. So, I mean, I think it makes for an interesting story. And if they release this back, if they release this story, say, this coming February about that, then, yeah, we'd be talking about it for quite a while. But I think releasing this news now, and, yeah, people are going to talk about it for a day or two, but then it's just going to be like, okay, what else is going on? But kind of think it is sort of much ado about nothing, or it's going to be end up being much ado about nothing.
Yeah, the Canadian ball right now is currently a quarter of an inch longer and an eighth of an inch bigger around. So it's hard to believe that such a small difference would mean the difference between more scoring. I'm like, I don't know. It's a ball. It still has the CFL logo, which people still talk about, which still people hate, the new logo. So it's... Why not add something new? You know?
When you talked about Canadian identity as part of one of the complaints about people not wanting the ball change. As long as we've got three downs, no yards, and the rouge, we've got the Canadian Football League. The ball isn't going to make a difference.
That's it. That's fair. I remember way back when they were trying, some people brought up the modifications of actually changing it to four down football. I think it's when during the U.S. experiment. I mean, I was like, are you nuts? You would totally lose the league as it was. You know, change the name. Da 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 da. It's like, no, ball's minor. A ball is minor. But I agree. Also, you know what? Another thing that I would throw into there, Steve, would be the ratio aspect. That's another strictly Canadian thing, which. Once you have a coach that comes up here, you have to juggle the Canadian, the rosters, so you can make sure you have the correct amount of players playing. That's truly Canadian itself, too. So it's
I would also add in the field goal post at the front, because
yes,
only in the CFL do you see a guy running full speed into the goal post like we saw in Regina the Riders a few weeks back.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, let us know what you think. You know, let us know what you think about anything that we talked about today. I mean, it's contact us over at our Facebook page, Twitter, our email. You know what they are. If you haven't, we had the commercial earlier. So got to talk about the game itself this week. We were mentioning at the top of the show that it may be a little bit different than in past weeks due to the fact that a backup quarterback is starting for the Ottawa Red Blacks. Are people going to jump to conclusions like they did this past week, guys, when it came to when Lule went down? Or are they going to be a little bit more apprehensive and saying, you know what, let's wait off and let's see? Because we can say that Drew Tate is a horrible backup quarterback, but then he comes out and he looks like the Darian Durant of old.
I suppose anything's possible. But, I mean, if you're just going strictly by history alone, like I said, Drew Tate has lost his last two starts in Montreal. And anytime he's been sort of given any sort of a bigger role than like short yardage or essentially a field goal placeholder, he hasn't really done a whole lot with it. Like, and again, stories have actually been written. I'm not kidding. Stories have actually been written about how Drew Tate is happy to just be a backup. Like, this is not a guy who's motivated to win. And why would he? I mean, for years he was with the Calgary Stampeders, who has been one of the most successful franchises in the Canadian Football League. He's been more than happy to ride the coattails of whomever the quarterback is. Mostly recently it was Bo Levi Mitchell. For a while it was Henry Burris. When it was time for him to be the star of the show, he kind of faltered, quite frankly. So I think he kind of knows his role, if you will. And I think he's more than happy with that. Now that he's with the Red Blacks, I think he was more than happy to just sort of let Trevor Harris do all the heavy lifting, and he'll come in every now and again. And yeah, I mean, honestly, like, there's nothing I've seen from Drew Tate in the past 5 years that's made me think, oh crap, we're playing Drew Tate. Oh man, there's nothing that suggests that. And even Ottawa Red Blacks fans, I haven't heard a whole lot of our nation. I think they're kind of cautious as well about that. I think they kind of realize too what they've got with Drew Tate, and the fact that you've you're pretty much relying on him. And if he goes down or if he falters really bad, then we have former NFL castoff Ryan Lindley, who also, too, I think is kind of glad just to sort of be where he's at right now. I mean, you've got a lot of weapons in Ottawa. There's no question about that. They've got some absolutely fantastic receivers. And I'm sure Drew Tate will just huck the ball up in the air and hope for a prayer or two. And again, as long as you're throwing towards Greg Ellingson, you've got a very good chance of getting touchdowns. But I mean, for Drew Tate to actually lead this team, especially on relatively short notice, I mean, I think this is the best possible opportunity for Montreal to really, truly get their head out of their ass, quite frankly, and maybe finally start winning something. I'm not saying it's going to be a guaranteed win solely because Drew Tate's playing, but it definitely does help Montreal's chances a lot, a hell of a lot more than what if Trevor Harris was still healthy and playing, because Trevor Harris just seems to own the Alouettes, especially this season. I mean, the way he's been able to connect, even last season too, when he was subbing in for Henry Burris, you saw the difference. You saw the different team that played for Trevor Harris versus who played for Henry Burris. And I got a feeling we're going to see more of that Henry Burris style team with Drew Tate at the helm. And I'm not saying that in a positive manner, to tell you the truth. I just don't see it ending well for Ottawa. I mean,
so are you,
who knows?
You're talking the Henry Burris of the first year Red Blacks?
The first year Red Blacks, and then when Montreal went to TD Place last year and just got shellacked by the Alouettes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Henry Burris who was quarterback then. But every time Trevor Harris steps behind center for the Red Blacks against the Alouettes, it's been Trevor Harris that's been ahead. So, I mean, just going by that alone, and like I said, just the fact that Drew Tate has done little to nothing that would make me feel confident in betting on him. I have to say, like, I always say that the only team that can really truly beat the Alouettes are the Alouettes. And if the Alouettes happen to lose this game against Ottawa, I don't think it's going to be because Drew Tate played an outstanding game. I think it's going to be because Montreal played an absolutely horrific game. And Drew Tate just happened to be, once again, like he has been for pretty well most of his CFL career, in the right place at the right time.
If Ottawa came into this game looking like world beaters, I could see it being different. But this is a team that's not looking like a Grey Cup, returning Grey Cup champs. They don't look that threatening this year. And that was with Trevor Harris. They weren't that team. They weren't the team to beat then. You got Drew Tate at quarterback, and I don't think they put the fear of God into anybody. I mean, I'm sitting there looking at it going, we play Ottawa twice as a Rider fan during that 3 to 6 weeks that Tate's supposed to be starting.
Yeah,
I'm excited. And for Alouettes fans, you couldn't ask for a better situation to try and kind of pull yourselves up and brush yourselves off and get back into the Eastern playoff race.
Considering how weak the division is, as we were mentioning before, it's any positive for this team will... Yeah, they need to take advantage of it, because as we've seen before, Cliff, in years past, you know, the Owls have had, you know, with one win, they were in primes. They had a perfect spot in order to either get in the first place or to do this or do that. And they've totally that seems to be the thing for the Alouettes. They've blown all these chances. This is one chance that they do need to take advantage of, right?
Absolutely. Like I said, I'm not going to go out and say the Alouettes will win just because Drew Tate is at quarterback. I'm just saying that it does give Montreal a good advantage. And at the end of the day, as long as you don't throw up all over yourself and piss this game away, as long as you play a somewhat half-decent game, I still feel very confident that you put your best effort forward against this Ottawa Red Blacks team with Drew Tate at the helm, you will come out with a victory. Like I said, I just don't see Drew Tate all of a sudden become the second coming of Henry Burris or Kevin Glenn and just picking this team, this Red Blacks team up and leading the victory on his arm alone. I just don't see it happening. I mean, even if he's got some very capable receivers, and if Moses Madu, who played an outstanding game against Montreal a couple weeks ago, if he's in the lineup and he's playing, just hand the ball off to him, and I'm sure he'll do a little bit better than expected. But I think if you were to just put all your faith in Drew Tate against Montreal, against a very pissed off, angry defense like it has been for the past couple of weeks, I just don't see Ottawa doing particularly well. But at the same time, Montreal can't go in thinking, oh, we're just playing Drew Tate. We got this. No, you got to go and play a real football game. These half-hearted, pathetic efforts that have been coming in from Montreal these past couple of weeks, they've got to stop. You've got to have a real honest-to-goodness game plan. Like, you've been given an incredible opportunity with Trevor Harris going down because now you don't have to worry about him. That doesn't mean you can take anybody on the Red Blacks lightly, because at the end of the day, yeah, they may not be the most fearsome team, even though they are defending Grey Cup champions, but they've still beaten you twice. They do own the season series, and they handed you your lunch a couple of weeks ago. I mean, if all this doesn't motivate Montreal to come up with a better game plan, with a better attack overall, not just on offense, but defense, special teams, everything as well. Everything's got to come together for this football team. It has to finally start to make sense. It has to finally click. Whatever mental block or whatever that's going on, whatever dark cloud that's hanging over this team, it's got to break, and it's got to break on Sunday. And you cannot squander an opportunity like this. I mean, even if you just win by 1 point, a win's a win. You just got to find a way to beat Ottawa and Drew Tate. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Now, usually where we check our stuff, Steve, for the lines this week, isn't available at Five Dimes for whatever particular reason. But going checking over at Massey Ratings, which is usually seems to be what the seems to be for at least for the CFL, seem to be the lines are based on. Ottawa's favored by 3.5 points. Does it surprise you that it's at that amount, or do you think it should be higher than that based on the team's current situation?
That Ottawa is favored by 3 points?
Ottawa is favored by 3.5 points, yes.
I think that at best that should go the other way. Montreal by 3.5, if not more. If Trevor Harris was starting, maybe I could see it that way with the way Montreal has been playing lately, but that just seems odd given the usual 3-point advantage for the home team. Because I don't think Ottawa with Drew Tate is a touchdown better than the Alouettes right now.
It may have changed too, because obviously with the Drew Tate situation, you know, maybe it's gone up or down, because I know that the numbers don't change here specifically when it comes to the betting lines, and they come up with those numbers. So Cliff, does it surprise you? Because, you know, past couple weeks they've been on the road, and yes, I mean, they've been an underdog no matter what the Alouettes have, but 3.5 points, does it surprise you?
Guess not really. I really truly wonder if these folks in Vegas even know anything about CFL football. I'm going to say no, but just based on these lines alone. I mean, I would say just if you're going to go based on recent history, I would say in theory, Ottawa should be favored by a touchdown. But the whole Drew Tate thing kind of throws a wrench into the works. So it may end up actually being about right. I mean, I would definitely be taking the under in this game. There's no question about that. But Ottawa favored by more than a field goal. It's hard for me to see it, but I'm only saying that because I know that Trevor Harris is not playing. If Trevor Harris was playing, it'd be a whole different story altogether. So I don't know. This is why I don't gamble, folks.
You would take the under. You would take the under at 47.5 points. That's the over.
I would take the under just because. Again, you don't know what you're going to get with Drew Tate. You know, Montreal's been struggling offensively. Mm-hmm. This could be. Like, I remember, was a couple of years ago, I think it was Ottawa and BC played to like a 7-5 final score.
Yeah, and the weather was not a factor, right?
Actually, there was bad weather, but it wasn't the complete factor. I think it was just the fact that these, at the time, was just two really bad football teams. And for whatever reason, that ended up being the score. And I wouldn't bet against necessarily seeing something similar. Like, I just see a very low scoring affair between these two particular teams on Sunday.
It's fair. That's fair to say. I mean, it's 47 points to me seems a little low, but all the points you brought up are actually pretty dead on. They are pretty dead on. So, no projections. We never do. we've learned our lesson, right, Cliff?
Oh, have we ever?
Yeah, it's like, give me the ping pong ball and I'll just dart and I'll just toss it at the dartboard.
Flip a coin.
Yeah. So, Steve, obviously we loved having you, hearing your side as from a Riders fan. What do you hope to accomplish when you come to Montreal this weekend? Besides poutine.
Oh, I can't wait to have a taste of some quality poutine.
puts in.
just to be as Saskatchewan as I can, I'm going to make sure and I pronounce it that way when I get some. But for me, yeah, I just want to check out Montreal as an adult. I mean, it's been 20 years since I've been in the city. I liked it back then. I'm looking forward to a good atmosphere. I'm hoping you guys put on a good show for me.
I think we will. You know, unfortunately, we don't have our beer run underground and come out to taps. You have to buy them in $10.50 cans.
Well, I guess I can live for one game, three, I suppose, but I'll try and suffer through it.
And it's not Pilsner, unfortunately.
I'm one of the few Saskatchewan guys who does not drink Pilsner unless I have to.
Okay.
That's true. I
like good beer.
I can vouch for that. I can vouch for that because when I went to Regina last year and I was with the gang at Piffles for their tailgate, you'd think I'd brought over gold because I brought over, what was it, the original 16?
Yeah, you brought 016, and we love 016.
There you go. So, I mean, it's not all Pilsner out there, believe it or not. And this, again, fun fact. I did not know that. I just stupidly assumed that everybody in Saskatchewan drinks Pilsner. But, no, there's actually some very good beer selections out there in Saskatchewan. And, yeah, people drink more than Pilsner out there. So that was fun to learn.
They just happen to be a major sponsor. I guess everybody's assuming. You know, and if anything, Cliff, let's get him a real bad Quebec beer and let's buy him a Maudit.
Oh yeah, there you go.
I expect nothing but the quality out there.
Oh yeah, Maudit. What is it? 12% alcohol content on the Maudit. I think.
That's about right.
Something stupid. Either way, we look forward to seeing you. I know you'll be right near us at the stadium on Sunday, Steve. We wish you all the best. This safest trip you can have, obviously, and it'll be fun to meet meet a Regina fan that I actually like.
we're a rare breed, just like the ones who don't drink Pilsner.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well,
Steve, definitely enjoy the experience, the three games in 3 days. I think it's going to be awesome. I think you're going to definitely enjoy Tim Hortons Field. BMO Field is actually really nice, too. I can definitely vouch for that. And we hope you enjoy our little home as well. I think you're lining up for a very good weekend.
I have no doubts it's going to be a blast, and I can't wait to meet you guys.
And the weather's going to be perfect. So it's going to be really warm. So, I mean, that's even better than the horrible winter. It feels like winter, summer that we've had. So we will talk to you guys next week, hopefully with very, very good news. But we're going to stay status quo. So for everybody here at Alouette's Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, for Steve Sefchuk, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.